everybody, and welcome to another NFL Roadshow episode. Lindsay Rhodes here with one game left in week six. It is Monday Night Football. It is Bills Titans, a game I fully expect to shift the AFC narrative right back in favor of the Bills. It's so funny to me how quickly we adjust and potentially over-adjust our impressions and superlatives on a week-to-week basis. Last week, everyone's favorite team at this exact time was the Bills. The Ravens hadn't played yet. They played on Monday Night Football. They played great. So then all of a sudden, you know, for the rest of the week, Ravens are the hot team. And then coming off of Sunday and the Ravens steamrolling of the Chargers, now they're the hot team, and the Bills, we'll see if they'll earn it back anyway. We're going to talk about that Ravens-Chargers game a lot more in detail on Wednesday's episode, by the way. We're going to have Daniel Jeremiah on the pod. He calls games for the Chargers. He is their color commentator for their radio broadcast, and I plan to discuss with him in great detail what is working with that franchise now that I am a hardcore fan of a couple of weeks. Also, what's not working. And we'll get into that. By the way, though, that decision to go for it on fourth and two in the third in their own territory, I do not consider that to be a thing that falls into the category of things that are not working for them. Although technically, yes, I agree. I understand. It did not work for them, literally speaking. I get that. I'm talking about the decision-making process, though. As far as I'm down, I'm totally good with it. You're already down 18 points. You have to start scoring. You're not playing not to lose, you're playing to win, as Herm Edwards once famously said. The best teams are going to play aggressively and know that they're going to get it in that situation more often than not. How often are they going to get it? Well, according to PFF, in the last 4 years, third and one and fourth and one, all of those situations have been converted to the tune of 68%. 68%, those are great odds. At the very least, they're very good odds. And yes, if you do not convert in that situation that the Chargers were in, I get it, you're in a deeper hole because they're going to automatically put points on the board, as the Ravens did. But if you can't get a fourth and one, and there's less than 6 minutes to go in the third quarter, and you've already given up touchdowns on drives of 90 and 74 yards earlier in the game, are you sure you can even stop that if you punt and give them a longer field, which, by the way, gives them a lot of clock to take up, clock that you don't have to play with because you have to score so many times to win the game? You have to score. You have to possess the ball. And if you only need 1 yard to continue possessing the ball and you have a 68% chance of making that happen, you have to do that. And by the way, that is exactly what they did last week to get back in the game against the Browns. Remember, and nobody remembers this now, it seems, because they won and we celebrated them and we quickly forgot how they won. They were down 14 points, the Chargers, in the third quarter against the Browns. They went for it on fourth down four times in the second half. They converted all of those. They scored touchdowns on those drives. They ended up scoring 34 points in the second half and winning a five-point game because they did that. And by the way, the first fourth down in that game was a nearly identical situation. Fourth and two on their own 24, down 13, start of the third. What was different about this one? They made that one. They missed this one. So we talked about Staley's aggressive play calling as being smart last week, and now we're questioning whether or not he should have done it, or some are questioning about whether or not he should have done that. And now that I'm completely off on this tangent, let's see it all the way through. They have converted. Let's see, looking it up. 8 of 12 fourth down attempts this year, the Chargers. Their opponents have converted 3 of 8. So think of it as 5 extra possessions. If you don't get it or you punt, you're giving the ball to the other team. If you go for it and make it, you have 4 more downs with which to work. Anyway, I'm not a mathematician. I'm not going to pretend like numbers don't totally overwhelm my tiny little brain, but this one makes sense to me. So anyway, thank you for coming to my TED Talk. Back to the point that I was making. What point was I making? That we were all in on the Bills last Monday, and then the Ravens played. They looked awesome. We flipped to the Ravens. And then the Ravens demolished a very good Chargers team, and we're all in on them still, and now the Bills will play and no doubt get us all back, in the AFC at least, where By the way, the Chiefs. The Chiefs have new life. Dominant win over the Washington football team. Defense shut them out in the second half. Not a good look for the Washington offense. But it is what the KC defense needed. Offense needs to take care of the ball better. 14 turnovers. 14, that's the most in the NFL. But I will say this. I liked that Patrick Mahomes kept doing his thing. He didn't tighten up and start playing conservatively after that awful interception in the first half. The thing that they have going for them, in my opinion, is that he can make any play, any throw at any time. And the threat of that, at the very least, is exhausting for a defense. So anything that would result in that being reined in any way feels very misguided to me. So I was glad to see that that wasn't the way that it played out. On the NFC side, Cardinals still undefeated without their head coach even at the game. Talked about that a lot on Friday on SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio when the news of Cliff Kingsbury's COVID status came down. Kind of forgot about it during the game, to be honest. I'm sure it wasn't a non-factor for the team, but the way they played made me feel like it was. Rams also impressive in a bounce back beatdown against the Giants that should not have featured Daniel Jones as long as it did. I cannot believe they kept Jones in there until the bitter end on an awful day for him, 7 days after he suffered a concussion in a situation where the game was completely out of reach. It made no sense to me. It felt reckless. What a shitty season for Giants fans. And Joe Judge is going to have to answer for that one. I've seen a lot of people going in on Dave Gettleman today, and there are a bunch of reasons to do that. But the timing, like now, they're 1-5, so fire him now. I understand that it is frustrating watching them get run out of their own building by a team that had to travel across the country to do that. But the offense he built that he expected to play in that game was not the one that was on the field. Daniel Jones, Saquon Barkley, Kenny Golladay, Sterling Shepard, and Kadarius Toney. Those five guys have played together for 17 whole snaps this season. Toney, by the way, I think we all agree he looked awesome, that's a great pick. They got him with the 20th pick in a move where Gettleman moved back to get him and picked up three draft picks in the process. So rather than taking someone, so it's sort of like thinking of with the 11th pick in the NFL draft, they got Toney and a first rounder for next year and two other draft picks to move around. So it feels like the team's been decimated by injury. And now we want to just rake everyone over the coals. And I fully understand that there have been things prior to this. There's the argument that you don't take Saquon Barkley with the pick that you did, that he's blown some of the, draft picks prior to this year. But the timing feels weird to me because I don't even know what this team would look like if they actually looked like the team that he built. So I get feeling bummed if you're a Giants fan. I'm not totally sure I get the anger component. Anyway, I've got other thoughts on this week's games, but I do want to bring my guest on now, who I am very excited to talk to for a number of reasons. It is Bruce Gradkowski, who played quarterback in the league for 11 seasons, five different teams, played as a rookie for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as a sixth round pick, started 11 games that year after Chris Sims' spleen ruptured. So he knows what the young guys are going through this year in particular. And because his time in the league was a few years back, he's also very familiar with some of the older guys that are still playing today. And how about this? And I love this. He's a PFF grader. Those grades that come out every week that people sometimes love to hate, I just love. I hear people write them off as like nerds ruining football. It's not a nerd. It's Bruce Gradkowski. And for the record, I love the nerds. I'm team nerd. But in this case, Gradkowski. So let's get started. It's time to break the huddle.
Hello, let's go.
2-1, 2-1, 2. Ready? Three.
Bruce, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, Lindsay, thanks for having me.
I have to tell you, I'm so intrigued by the fact that you are a grader for PFF. Like, I'm obsessed with PFF. I'm a little bit jealous that you work for PFF. And I'm curious about this process of grading and what goes into that and what that's like, because, you know, you ever always hear people chirping about the PFF grades. And in some cases they're coming from you.
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, you know, I started working for PFF 3 years ago, I think it was. And it actually was right after I had an interview with Sean McVay and the Rams to be an assistant quarterback coach. And I come out of it. I don't get the job. And my buddy, Zach Robinson, gets it. And Zach and I played together in Cincy. We were both backup quarterbacks to Andy Dalton. Zach's a great dude, does a great job. He's still out there with the Rams. And at one point, McVay's like, man, you're just too much like me, you know? And at the time, you know, Goff's the quarterback. And he's like, you know, it worked well with Zach Taylor. I think Zach Robinson's similar. And you remind me of a lot of myself. And I was like, can you tell people that? Can you
get that? Like everybody very publicly.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Everyone's looking for the next Sean McVay.
Yeah, hey, yeah, in high school, right? I'm starting at high school right now. So I never feel like I have enough plays, but we'll get to that. So that's kind of where it started, because Zach Robinson was working for PFF. Zach Robinson introduced me to Neil Hornsby, who, you know, came up with PFF and then partnered with, you know, Chris Collinsworth and all that. So it was just an awesome opportunity for me to stay engaged with the game, help out. And PFF is just, it's unbelievable, honestly. And I know you said you're a huge fan, but, you know, working inside, I'm just like, I'm amazed, because there's so many people that have their hand in it to help get the data that is so useful in the media, for teams, college, NFL. So, I mean, we grade every player, every game, you know, every play. It's insane, really. And there's so much communication going back and forth. And you caught me actually right when I finished grading every throw. So I grade every throw from Sunday. Sunday night, I get the film probably about 6:30 or 7:30, and I grade to about 2 or 3 in the morning. Then I get up, you know, in the morning, and I try to finish by like 11:30 or noon, so we could get it in. So, you know, and sometimes too, at this point, I'm like, okay, what did I actually just watch? Because I've watched so many throws.
Well, and you're super in the weeds, right? So I would imagine you watch it very differently than you would watch a game if you're just sitting on your couch.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it helps me. Like, I love watching the games on my couch because you get a different perspective. I love just watching the flow of a game. Sometimes when you're watching the coach's film, you know, I'm just watching one team's offense. You know, sometimes it's hard to get a feel of the flow of the game and whatnot. But you do get an in-depth look at, you know, the coverage, the concepts, you know, how the quarterback's, you know, moving in the pocket and so forth like that. And just, you know, an overall really good view of everything. And so it is pretty cool because I help oversee the quarterback grading because it's so important. You know, we want to make sure we're as accurate as can be. But it also is like we have such a good team where, you know, if a throw comes up, for instance, and I'm like, hey, Tom Brady on this throw, I don't know if it's a big time throw. You know, it's a good throw, but, you know, it's pretty open. And I think the receiver does a good job to do this. So there's so much communication going on what the route was, the coverage and everything like that. So it's a lot of fun. And I'm glad you enjoy it, too.
How many people are involved? Like, so just talking quarterbacks, since that's what you do, how many people are involved in the process of getting a quarterback's grade out? Is it Bruce Gradkowski's grade effectively, or is it like 5 different people are grading and then you take an average?
Yeah, no. So there's different levels, right? There's someone grading the game as it's happening, right? And then when we get the games in later on, there's another 2 or 3 levels that go through the same game behind the scenes. And then I kind of filter where, you know, the last eyes on the quarterback grade, but I still communicate probably with 5 or 6 other guys to make sure, you know, because I'm always like, I don't want to just put my stamp and say, hey, this is how I see it. And that's it. No, I like the communication. I like getting other guys' input, especially the ones at PFF that this is their system and their grading process and everything like that. So, it, you know, a lot of times it's like, hey, here's how I see the play. You know, Baker Mayfield, he did a good job escaping, but he still should have hit that throw. Or, hey, he was escaping so fast, he was just throwing it away. It actually wasn't a missed throw. You know, he was just throwing the ball away, making sure he didn't take the sack. So there's so much communication that goes in to that. So at the end of the day, after a bunch of levels go through the grading, there's probably about five, you know, four or five of us that really are, you know, the last ones to say, okay, this is how we see it. And then we push it through.
Have you, I'm sure you have, are there any examples you can think of where you watched a game on your couch and a narrative, you know, you're creating a narrative in your head about what's happening there and who's playing well and who's not playing well. And then you go back and grade it and it totally changes your mind because you see it differently.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, just today, I think it was Tua, and I didn't get to watch Tua, you know, on TV, but just from, you know, maybe watching some things on TV this morning as I'm grading, you know, people show the one play of him trying to throw a cover two hole shot, you know, the outside receiver's running a go route. The defense is in a cover two, which is a hard corner and a safety over top. And sometimes quarterbacks try to drill it in that hole about 18 to 20 yards downfield. And Tua just didn't get enough on it and looked awful. It was like right to the corner. And so, you know, the conversation was just about Tua and he just doesn't have it and this and that. But then I go through Tua's actual game and I'm like, oh, he actually played pretty well. You know, aside from a few plays, I felt like Tua actually played pretty darn good. He looked decisive. He was making some good throws. And there was a few boneheaded plays he probably would want back, like the one I was talking about. But that happens. You know, he's missed some time. He's missed some weeks. So to get back in the action. But I thought he did play a pretty good game. So, yeah, so that's an example of maybe when you see it on TV and kind of the chatter around, you know, on certain sites and shows, it doesn't really depict really maybe how the guy has played.
Well, we do tend to blow up like one or two plays here or there, right? Like that is
for sure.
How that person played for the entire game in this highlight driven culture. Who played well yesterday? Who was very highly graded? Who impressed you?
Carson Wentz.
Carson.
Yeah.
What'd you like from him?
So Carson Wentz the last few weeks to me has been playing pretty well. Sorry, I'm freezing up a little bit because I'm, you know, some things, Lindsay, with internet, I just don't get it. I've had people over the last week trying to up my internet. They put me on a business speed and it's still, you know, I'm on my SiriusXM NFL radio show and they're getting mad at me because it's getting slow. And I said, guys, I literally just had it replaced last week. And so I just don't get it at times. So
you are all of us right now, Bruce. Everybody can relate to these frustrations.
Isn't it amazing? But no, Carson Wentz the last few weeks has played really well. And it's cool to see. He's playing decisive. He's making some good throws. And, you know, Frank Wright, though, in that Colts offense, he does just such a good job at helping the quarterback get in a rhythm. I love their screen game. You know, outside to the receivers, the way they get the running backs the ball, the tight ends, the shifts, the motion. So they do a really good job of helping the quarterback get in a rhythm. Because as a quarterback, if you start the game and you're 5 for 5 or 6 of 6, it doesn't matter if they're all screen passes, you feel pretty good. And now when they start to dial up the ones downfield, you're like, cool. You know, and you go through your read and you hit it. If it's there, you get to your check down and stuff like that. So I think Frank Wright's doing a really good job. But I really noticed Carson Wentz. He threw some awesome balls in yesterday's game. Some big time throws. We call it a PFF. That were, you know, I think two of them were the most highly graded throws of the weekend. Carson Wentz had it. So he threw some great, great balls.
What constitutes a big time throw?
A big time throw is it's got to have a certain depth to the throw. And then the throw has to help the play, you know, turn out to be the good play, you know, whether it's away from coverage where the quarterback put in a perfect spot against tight covers that because of that ball, it was completed. It, you know, probably a certain depth downfield, you know, those 40-yard go balls over the shoulder, boom, perfect ball. That's a big-time throw. And sometimes it could be those 20-yard dig routes in between coverage. You know, those 20 yard in routes, 18 to 20 yards where a receiver's running in and you have to kind of drop it over a linebacker, but then there has to be enough velocity that it's actually before the safety. You know, so just those type of throws. And, you know, and there's big time plays as well where a quarterback just does a really good job, maybe escaping a sack, and the throw is very good as well. So kind of compiling those together could get the guy, you know, a big time play.
Is that maybe the way we ultimately get to a point where we can tangibly track whether somebody is clutch or not?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, we could say like, oh, especially for watching, you know, from the naked eye, watching it on TV, we could say, oh man, wow, look at that throw. That, you know, he's playing well today. But then I've also realized it's some quarterbacks that are really just compiling a ton of positive throws, right? They're not putting the ball in the harm's way. I mean, it's, you know, why Ryan Tannehill over the last couple of years, and not so much this year, but he's still, you know, doing a decent job, is he just always was having good, positively graded throws. He, you know, Daniel Jones early in the season, I mean, that's why he was kind of playing well. It was a lot of positively graded throws. It wasn't always a lot of big time throws. And of course he was protecting the football as well, so that wasn't hurting his grade. Yesterday, a little different, you know, cause a few sacks in the pocket, a few interceptions. It just all depends. And the thing I love about our grading system too, Lindsay, is, you know, yesterday someone's going back and forth. I think it was Patrick Mahomes' mom, was it not? Someone tweeted something about that shouldn't be on the quarterback. And I was thinking to myself, you know, that's a great point. And that's why RPFF data is awesome, because we don't put it on the quarterback. If it hits off the receiver's hand,
yes,
and goes up in the air and gets picked, it's not on the quarterback.
Should there be such a stat as team interceptions?
I know that would, I mean, I'm sure it might get to that point of some. It's so hard though, too, because even when we go through the grading, you know, it's like, okay, did this receiver cut his route too short or go too deep? I know 2 years ago with Baker Mayfield and OBJ, when they were first connecting, there was a big in route and OBJ at the top of the route kind of put a little too much sugar on it. Baker Mayfield's thrown on time and in rhythm, lays it in the hole, but, you know, OBJ's not getting in the hole because he's kind of doing too much at the top of the route. So a slight miscommunication there. So there's a lot that goes into it too. So it would be hard in a sense to, you know, have the team interception stat, but it definitely makes sense, especially for those, you know, picked interceptions that you see that it's like, oh man, or the, you know, we always say tips or picks. Anytime you see that the ball get tipped to the line of scrimmage, your heart just drops. Because as a quarterback, you're like, oh my gosh, please hit the ground. Please hit the ground.
OBJ putting too much on it at the top of the route. Is that happening all the time? Because I can't figure out why those two can't connect.
I know. In guys like that are special. OBJ, Antonio Brown. I was in Pittsburgh with Antonio Brown. And it's tough as a quarterback. You know, for myself, for instance, when I was in there with Antonio Brown, I wasn't, of course, as good as Ben, where Ben had just a knack to complete the pass no matter what the receiver did. For me, I was throwing on time and in rhythm. So I'd take a 7-step drop, I'd one hitch, and I'm letting that ball go, and I'm trusting the receiver's going to be there. Well, at times, you know, receivers like OBJ or Antonio Brown, they have so much natural ability and wiggle and shake that they can get that separation from a DB. So they work him a little bit more and boom, and they come out wide open. But if you're not used to it, or you don't have that ability to hold on to it because you don't have that strong enough of an arm or something like that. So you see that at times. And, you know, with Baker Mayfield and OBJ, you know, I think it's, you know, continuing to work it. You know, last week, OBJ dropped a clutch 4th-and-3. You know, if he catches that, they get the first, or even he squirts through, it was in the red zone, and gets a touchdown. There could be different conversations now, even though it was a short, easy, shallow cross. And, you know, those things happen. I'm not putting it on OBJ. I'm just saying there's little plays throughout the game. If they just connect on those, people probably aren't talking about it as much, but they do have to find a way to kind of get that connection.
You think they should keep working on that? Or do you think that they should trade OBJ? Since it's not working, you could get something back for him. I mean, it feels like the offense was good at the end of last year. I don't know. It's weird to think that you would even think about giving away an asset like that, because we think of him as this big time wide receiver, but we haven't seen that guy in a while.
I know, you're right. I mean, since he got to Cleveland, you're not seeing what they gave up to get him and so forth. So it's definitely something that probably goes through their mind. Like, okay, is this worth it? And he does have the talent. He still has a lot of football left in him. I would like to see them work it out. It's going to be interesting where the Browns go, though, Lindsay, because Mayfield's beat up right now. I mean, I had in college, my left shoulder popped out on me in the MAC championship game, you know, a little throwback, a little MAC championship. And I finished that game, Lindsay. You know, I was the MAC MVP. Not gonna, I broke my hand in that game too. And I have a plate and six screws in it. But anyways.
You're so tough.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You know, let me tell my wife that. She doesn't believe it. But, no, so it bugs you a lot. I mean, I know it's his left shoulder, but when my left shoulder popped out on me, it was a posterior labrum tear. So it came out posterior, not anterior. So I didn't have the problem of it subluxing and coming out again multiple times. So I couldn't imagine if it would keep popping in and out. I felt like it was about to, because it just felt weak. But I played the whole next season with it, so I was fine. But it just seems like,
how does that, that's got to mess with you all the time. If you're worried about whether your shoulder is going to pop out.
It's the worst feeling ever. So in that MAC championship game, it was a simple hit that did it to me. And we're a no huddle offense. It literally pops out of the socket. So my left arm, I can't move it because it's out of the joint. So Lance Moore is my receiver at Toledo, you know, played 9 years with the Saints, 11 years in the NFL. And he's standing by me as we're looking to the sideline for the play. And I'm like, hey, Lance, pop my shoulder back in. And he starts yanking my arm down.
No!
And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's not going to work. So I call a timeout.
Aren't there professionals around who do this? Okay, but yes. You're on the field still. Got it. Gross.
Yeah. But then I call a timeout. I go to the sideline and they're like, what's wrong? I said, my shoulder's out. And they're like, lift it up. I said, I can't move it. So they lay me back on the ground and then boom, they pop it back in. And I'll tell you what, I felt so nauseous when it was out of the socket. The minute they put it back in, I was like, oh, thank you. Like I felt fine again. Now it felt weak and all that, but man, when it's out of its joint, it does not feel right. So I feel for Mayfield at this time, like it's now every hit he's about to take, you know, he's worried like, oh, I can't land on the shoulder. And then, you know, even at the end of the game, you saw him scramble out to left. He's just running to the sideline. You see him slide because he's like, man, I can't take a hit, even just to get tackled on it. So I'm very intrigued what they're going to do, because as a player, and especially Mayfield, he's not going to pull himself out. He's not that type of player. So I think it's up to the coaches to be like, look, you know what? It might be best that we do pull you out, because, you know, you're probably not going to play as well. You know, it is going to be coming in and out. You don't want to continue to do more damage to your shoulder and so forth. So it's really going to be interesting where they go from here. And if we see Mayfield the rest of the season, or if they go in a different direction, and then does OBJ and Case Keenum have a connection? I mean, so much for the Browns, and they, you know, Kareem Hunt out for a little bit. So they're going through some things right now.
That feels like that could go downhill pretty quickly with the Thursday game and the running back question marks there. You mentioned Ben Roethlisberger could make the throws sometimes that you couldn't in Pittsburgh, that he didn't need necessarily. What do you mean by that?
I remember specifically this one game, you know, Todd Haley calls a play. I'm on the sideline. I have sunflower seeds in my mouth, backwards hat. Like I'm just enjoying a beautiful day, you know, listening to the plays while Ben's out there, like, you know, grinding, trying to get a win. So Todd Haley calls a play. It was like X under. So Antonio Brown has a 5-yard under route and he runs it. He's starting to come under and he feels the cornerback jump in front of him. So he puts on the brakes, throws his hand up like he's going to go run a go route now. And Ben like pumps, holds on to the ball, recoils it, and drops a dime down the sideline. We score. Everyone's high-fiving on the sideline, going nuts. And I'm looking around like, I would have thrown a pick six right there. You can't stop on that route. You got to cross face and not let the DB get in front of that. And just everyone, so you take it for granted. Like so many years, people have taken Big Ben for granted for what he has been able to do. So a play like that is just, it's phenomenal because he's just so natural. It's like backyard football, like, oh, you know, and then he, you know, hits the pass, touchdown, everyone celebrates, and we move on to the next drive. So, you know, there's been multiple plays like that, that you just see his natural ability to make plays and the natural connection that AB and Ben had.
Does Ben still bring that to the table?
You know, that's something that over the last year and a half, I've noticed he misses some throws that he never would miss. Like one thing with Ben in practice, he'd take a few days off, like an OTA time. So it was like off season, you know, May, June. But then when he would come back to practice, he would just be on, like boom, 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 hitting every pass. And like I said, it wasn't always like perfect routes and stuff, but it was just, he was able to complete ball passes. Like it's natural for him. And so the last few years, I've noticed that he's missing throws that I just wouldn't expect him to miss. Now, I think a lot goes into that too. It's not that, hey, Ben has lost the ability. You know, I think it's, you know, young offensive line now. You're trying to rework a connection with different and young receivers. And then, you know, physically, there's probably a little difference. You know, he went through a surgery on his throwing arm like that. It's different. It's hard to come back from. So I think everything plays into it. So when everyone's nitpicking the Steelers offense over the last, you know, month, it's like all these things play a factor. But when you're not winning, there's even more of a microscope on it and the pressure builds up. But they were just, there are a few plays that they're just off on where if they hit it, it's not even a conversation. And I think just lately, him and Deontay Johnson have gotten in their group. This offense has looked a little better. Ben has looked a little more poised in the pocket. And if I'm Matt Canada and Mike Tomlin, you have Ben back this year. Do what he's comfortable with. I mean, you're going to, you know, ride and die with him. Flip him the keys and say, what are you comfortable with? Let's make you comfortable, because if he's comfortable and plays well, this team can do something.
What do you, based on what you've seen, what do you think that would actually be?
Well, I think, you know, Ben likes his concepts that he's used to in the past, but also you have to pick up the tempo at times, you know, give Ben some no huddle, let him run it, you know, get, you know, where he's on the ball, because like I said before, he has a natural ability to make plays. I mean, we all know that. We've watched it for so many years. So kind of let him do his thing in a sense. And yeah, there's going to be plays where, you know, he throws a pick, but I've been a part of games where I think we were playing the Colts and Andrew Luck, and watching Big Ben and Andrew Luck go at it was insane, because these guys were going back and forth. I think Ben had like three or four picks, but he had six touchdown passes. Like the guy never flinched. And that's how like Andrew Luck is, you know, and, you know, I'm coaching this high school team. I'm like, guys, things happen. You just have to be able to deal with adversity and move on to the next play. And it's like Ted Lasso says, you got to be like a goldfish, right? And have that short term memory.
Easier said than done.
You're right.
You said something earlier when you were talking about Tua and getting a young quarterback in particular, but any quarterback really into a rhythm to kind of develop that confidence. And then you can take those shots a little bit later on. The Patriots offense has been so conservative this year. Just 21 pass attempts in that game against the Cowboys yesterday. There were only 7 in the first half. By the way, all of them completed for 100 yards and a touchdown, a perfect passer rating for Mac Jones with 7 pass attempts in the first half. But they're so conservative, right? They're not taking many chances. They're not taking any chances at the end of the half. They took a knee on 2 straight plays to run the clock out in the first half. On the one hand, I get that you have a young quarterback that you're developing and you're trying to protect his growth. And by the way, not for nothing, they almost won that game.
Right.
But on the other hand, you're like, you know, if you're going to play football, Like, don't take a knee. Don't be so defensive that you're not actually trying to do anything. Is this conservative approach that we're seeing from them the right approach for them this year?
You know, Bill Belichick, yeah, I love watching him because he's like a chess player. You know, he's going to play the odds and he's going to play the game right and all that. I think, too, sometimes when we look at it and we're like, oh, man, they're not throwing the ball downfield. Sometimes I think it's not necessarily that. It's just, you know, Mac Jones is a smart quarterback. He gets through his reads and progressions. He gets to the checkdowns quick. It's like how Tom Brady was. I mean, if you're able to try to sustain or move the ball and keep drives going, and you don't have to continue to force it downfield, and you're just kind of like boom, 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 and there, it's just an extension of the running game, some of these throws, you know, it makes sense. But when you do have the big plays downfield, you got to hit it. And I thought that game was so fun to watch against the Cowboys because, you know, Mac Jones throws that pick six. And then how does he respond? He comes back and throws a beautiful ball downfield. Now, the safety played it horrendous.
Right.
But, you know, but still, it was a great route. He got open. And honestly, we talk in offensive meetings. Sometimes that's why you throw the ball. That's why DBs are DBs and not receivers. They don't have hands.
Make them make a play. Yeah.
Right. Right. So I thought that was a cool game to see that comeback. And Mac Jones has showed that resiliency he has and perseverance. But, you know, yeah, at some points, you know, you have to make those big plays downfield and you don't want it, especially as a quarterback. It's tough when you have to throw the ball downfield when you have to. Like, call those throws when you don't have to and they come open easier. And if not, I'll get to my check down. So I do think they call some of those. I just think Mac's quick to get the, you know, check downs as well.
The Vikings finally at the end of that game threw the ball a little bit more than we've seen. They're such an interesting team to me this year because, frankly, I'm not impressed, right? I went into the year kind of thinking like they're right somewhere in the middle. They could teeter either way. They could be better than a middle of the pack team. They could be worse than a middle of the pack team. Right now, it's kind of where they're somewhere there in the middle of the pack. But when I watch them, I'm not impressed with them. And it confuses me as to why it's playing out that way, because I look at the roster and I'm like, well, Justin Jefferson's balling out and Adam Thielen's great. And Dalvin Cook is great. And frankly, his backup, Alexander Mattison, is great too. And then Kirk Cousins playing well. I mean, yesterday completed nearly 70% of his passes. He threw the ball 48 times, 373 yards. It's like, it's boom or bust, you know? Yeah. It either hits or they go three and out. They're going three and out as much as the Jaguars practically.
Or they have kickers that just miss game-winning kicks.
That happens too. Yeah. Oh,
you know, I was with Mike Zimmer in Cincy. He was the defensive coordinator. And I love Zimmer because he's such a competitor. And every day, you know, Andy Dalton's a starter. I'm the backup. So I'm running scout team. And I'm trying to get his defense to mess up. I'm trying to get him to jump off sides. I'm making up plays and cadences in the huddle just to make him mad, because he would just get so ticked off. Him and Dick LeBeau were two of my favorite defensive coaches, because they just such competitors, but were great with their players as well. So I'm with you. Like, sometimes I'm confused. Like, man, why aren't the Vikings better? Or why aren't they consistently winning? Or why can't they get back to where they were? And the reason they brought Kirk Cousins in, because like you said, Kirk Cousins is a good quarterback. I mean, he plays consistent. I mean, he's going to make the plays if they're there. It's just, you know, it's just that thing that you know, it's that it factor we all talk about, that it's just someone's got to make plays when it matters. You know, I mean, that's how the Cowboys and Patriots game, you know, ended up coming about. You know, it was a 4th-and-4 and Dak throws a pass away from coverage, high and away. They make a play. And then later on, the CD Lamb, the big in round on 3rd-and-25 to get him in field goal. Like, guys have to step up and make plays in key moments. And that's what you have to see. And I'm not saying the Vikings don't, but, you know, that's what I kind of pinpoint, where you separate the okay teams, you know, to those teams like the Chiefs, Green Bay, you know, the Buccaneers now with Tom Brady. You know, it's just they got a guy that is just not going to let the team fail.
Who are you most impressed by this year? We've talked about a lot about the teams that kind of have some question marks here. You're grading all of these throws, watching all of these teams. Who's the team? Who's the quarterback that you're like, this one's good. Even if they have an off week, this is going the distance. I mean, not saying that they're going to win the Super Bowl, anything can happen, but just like, I am good with this team. This is who I'm rolling with.
I mean, I know it's like cliche and everyone's saying it, but it's Tom Brady. Like you can't, I cannot sit here and not say that because he's just playing really good, clean football. I mean, he had his first turnover-worthy play for us at PFF on, what was it, Thursday night. Like, so in a turnover-worthy play, it is what it sounds like. You know, it's a turnover-worthy play. It's either an interception that should have been caught, a pass he shouldn't have thrown that should have been picked, you know, fumble in the pocket on a sack. And Brady's just been playing clean football. And
that was his first one of the year.
Yeah, first one of the year the other night. And I texted all my guys.
Go away, Tom. Ugh.
And I'm not gonna lie, I kind of loved it because you know we have a few guys that love Tom Brady. So right away I'm like, yep, his first turnover-worthy play of the year.
It only took till week six. Yeah, he's not perfect.
Yeah, but you know the thing I love about Brady is the stuff that he just finds a way. You know, it's not always pretty. But you know, you know, you don't want to give him the ball back at the end of the game because he just finds a way, you know, and it's just, and then I think as you get older and he keeps playing, I'm not going to say the game gets easier, but in a sense, he has seen a ton of football. He has so much experience and his body, if physically, he still looks good. His arm looks good. And I think playing the quarterback position, as long as your arm's good, you could play a long time. And Brady, man, he hasn't lost a step physically.
That's the crazy thing, I think, is that I think almost everybody probably gets to be a better quarterback when they get older because of the experience and you can process things more quickly and the whole mental part of the game, which is such a big part of the game, obviously. But then the problem is that it coincides with the decline physically, right? It's like, so you know what you have to do and you can get there faster mentally and then you just can't do it.
Oh, well, and it, you know, on a smaller scale, I'm not comparing my career to Tom Brady, but my shoulder was killing me at the end of my career. And I'd be like, ooh, I love that matchup. And I'd go for it. And I'm like, oh, like you just.
I'm the weak link in the matchup.
You know, I had my coaches, even Big Ben, give me a hard time in Pittsburgh. Like, oh, you had to crow hop like three times to throw that ball. And I'm like, man. It was never like that before. Like I could make every throw.
Okay. Since you grade things, I want to ask you to grade two things from the weekend. And then I know you've got a high school practice to get to, Mr. Head Coach. I would like you to grade Russell Wilson's pregame warmup.
Man, that dude's a stud. You know, him and Drew Brees, like, cause Lance Moore was my roommate in college and he played with Brees for 9 years. And he would tell me every Saturday walkthrough, you're walking through the plays, you know, that you're going like for the game, third down situations, you know, short yardage, goal line, red zone. And after Lance would say Brady or Drew Brees would go through all the plays and go through his reads. 1, 2, 3, run, you know, and just like Russell Wilson was doing. And I think, you know, it looks funny and we're like laugh, but to stay mentally engaged, it's huge. It's like, it's that next step because when you're hurt, you mentally are out of it. Like, and it's just natural. I have a few high school players now that, you know, they're beat up a little bit. And I told them, I said, you got to put the pads on for practice because if you're in street clothes and you're standing around mentally, you're out of it. You're not thinking, you're not focused. But if you're trying to get back in it and you're dressed and you're in the practice, it's just a different way mentally. And so for Russell Wilson to see that guy, I mean, he just wants it. He's going to beat that timeline for the injury to get back.
Did he need to walk through the huddle? Did he need to do the fake huddle part?
I mean, you know, he probably likes a little camera time too. You know,
you think that might have been a part of it?
Just a little, I mean, we all like a little TV time. And
I was waiting for the pretend like knuckles and hey.
Yeah. Little smack on the behind. Hey, good job. Hustle.
on air. I love it. Okay. Last thing to grade, Aaron Rodgers touchdown celebration.
Oh man. In those moments, that's so fun. Like he was fired up. And nowadays there's cameras, microphones everywhere. And I thought it was even funnier after in his post-game press conference, him, you know, said, I can't remember what I said out there. he gave it right to Bears fans. I mean, that was pretty cool, though. And, you know, you talk about Russell Wilson in the huddle. I remember John Gruden drafted me in the sixth round of Tampa. And his playbook, I'd stay up till like 2 in the morning because I didn't want to get in the huddle with Joey Galloway, Mike Allstott, and stumble over words. Because there was a play that kept me up at night, and it was Indy right 10, X short, fake 96, power king, naked left, X slide. So
how do you still remember that off the top of your head?
Because I was scarred for life trying to remember all these plays, and I just can't get it out of my head.
Oh, my gosh. And now you're putting that on other people.
Well, and now I feel like Sean McVay because I was texting my buddy and I was like, I just don't feel like I ever have enough plays going on the high school game. And I have like 200 on my like play call sheet. And they're like, dude, it's high school football. Like maybe you need to step back a little bit and let the kids just play.
Is that normal? When you like look across to the other sideline, do they have 200 plays on their play
sheet? Yeah, no, it's probably not normal.
All right, Bruce, we'll let you get to the Knights. Go Knights. How's the season going?
It's good. We got a big game this weekend and we still could get in the playoffs. This is the last regular season game Friday. Play a big time rival. We haven't beat them in 20 years, Lindsay. So
last regular season game, it's the middle of October.
Isn't it? I know. Isn't it crazy? So then we'll have playoffs, but then I get to spend some more time on the NFL, grading all these games and some college as well. So
awesome. Love it. Come back again and talk to us.
For sure. Well, I appreciate you having me on.
And you can follow Bruce on Twitter, BGradkowski5. That was fun. As I mentioned, he was under a bit of a time crunch. He had to get to a football practice. So that is why I didn't follow up with him there at the end when he mentioned Gruden. I would have loved to have followed up with him about that particular name in a few different ways. Obviously, would have liked to have, you know, been able to get his reaction to everything that came out. But two, just paying attention to the football as it is going to affect the NFL moving forward, since he played for Gruden and he watched Carr play on Sunday, I'm curious to know what he saw that felt different from a play calling standpoint, because that feels very relevant, right? Like, how will they be different now with Olsen calling the shots? Obviously, game one went very well. And I think that Gradkowski might have had an interesting perspective in terms of what he saw, but there wasn't time. So maybe next time. We're going to talk Chargers on Wednesday with Daniel Jeremiah, since I'm a Chargers fan now. Also guessing that we'll hit some other teams, get a real early draft snapshot, perhaps some names to put on your radar and my radar as well. In the meantime, if you enjoyed this episode and you want to hear more, please give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. Also subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Pandora, wherever you get your podcasts. The NFL Roadshow is also available on the SXM app, free for most subscribers. Just download it today and tap podcasts. For video clips of the show and more, please follow me on Twitter, Lindsay_Rhodes. I'm also on Instagram, LindsayRhodesNFL. And the NFL Roadshow is part of the SiriusXM Podcast Network. The executive producer is Andrew Emmer. Andy King is the director of sports podcasting for SiriusXM. Special thanks to SiriusXM's senior vice president of sports programming and podcasting, Steve Cohen. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you again on Wednesday.
SiriusXM Podcasts.